Okay, and now here's Jack Patty.
Good morning and welcome into Friday. It's the 22nd day of August, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown grass seed, the best seed for our area, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day is brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional foundation repair and waterproofing company in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. It's raised a lot of money for a good cause, but has the ice bucket business run its course? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. What should the U.S. response be to the murder of James Foley by Islamic State? That was our question yesterday. 42% of you said wipe them out. 25% said continue to target attacks. And 25% of you said step up the pressure on Islamic State. And 8% of you said stop military efforts and rethink our position. Of course, this is a Forensic Friday. Every Friday we have American DA live with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Ray, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Every year you guys have a convention here in Lexington with prosecutors from around the state. And over these last several years, you've brought some of the superstars from the stable of Commonwealth's attorneys
well,
with
that's
you.
That's what we like to think.
And obviously you couldn't get them this morning, so tell us who you brought with you.
We hope to have the conference every year in Lexington, but every year the Prosecutor's Advisory Council makes a decision about where they're going to hold it. And so in Lexington, it's been here for the last several years. With us this morning are Commonwealth attorneys from around the state. Rick Bartley is the Commonwealth attorney from Pikeville. Rick, welcome.
Good morning, everybody.
If you'll remember, last time Rick was here, we talked about the guy sitting on the couch watching cartoons, all stoked up on pills.
Mm-hmm.
Also with us is somebody that's a regular guest, Rob Sanders from Kenton County.
Hey, Rob.
Morning, Ray. Morning, Jack.
Morning.
And from Bowling Green, Chris Coron is the Commonwealth's attorney, and all these guys are freaks. They're just well over 6 feet tall, except for me, and I think anybody over 6 feet tall is a freak. You do too, don't you, Jack?
I do, yeah. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
Always good to have you here.
Lexington.
We're going to talk about crime in the state, but as you know, Ray, the first thing we always want to talk about is what is top of mind. What is top of mind in the country is what's going on in Ferguson. And I just like to you guys to get in conversation about that. It's been interesting.
Has everybody here been following? I've been following it pretty closely because Chris and I and Rob know the prosecutor in St. Louis.
Oh, do you?
Bob McCullough, very well. And Bob McCullough is, first of all, an interesting guy. He's about 6'4". And he's
normal height.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, knock it off.
Has a full head of hair.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And he had a leg amputated in his past because he had some kind of bone cancer.
Mm.
And he's been a prosecutor there for 23 years, and he's a tough prosecutor. And but he's taken a lot of stuff from whoever this governor is out there, and he kind of put the governor on the spot because the governor says he wanted him off the case because Bob had his father was a police officer in St. Louis and was killed.
Oh, I see.
A black guy who he was trying to arrest and who had been charged with kidnapping. And so the governor said a lot of people say he's biased and that sort of thing, and the governor suggested that he might want to get off the case. And Bob said, look, the governor can remove me from the case if he wants. I'm suggesting to the governor that if he wants me off the case, he man up and do it. Otherwise, stay out of it.
Interesting.
So, well said, Bob. Okay, what do we think about this, guys? Rick, what do you think?
Well, the thing that's disappointed me the most has been the people that have rushed to judgment that we can't believe police officers and we can't trust the prosecutors. And my experience is, overwhelmingly, The police are serious about their jobs, and the prosecutors, I know, are serious about their jobs. And so I'm just really curious as to why so many people want to rush to judgment that we can't trust the cops and the prosecutors.
Well, Chris, what do you think?
You know, anytime you have a major incident like that, we live in the days now of a 30-second news cycle with Twitter and social media and everything else, and everybody, it demands a right to know immediately. The main thing in managing a major incident is you don't prosecute using public opinion polls. You gather all the facts, gather all the information. You keep the investigation private because you don't want anything to affect it. So Bob McCullough, who, as we've watched through this whole ordeal, has held his water. He's going to wait for all the facts to come in. He's an experienced prosecutor. He's going to present all the facts to the grand jury, and then the grand jury will make the decision on what, if any, charges should be brought.
Rob?
Well, I think if there's one thing that the public should take out of this, it's a lesson in the restrictions on prosecutors and pretrial publicity. And we can't go forward, specifically have ethics rules that prohibit us from going public with all the evidence in a case, because no defendant, if we do that, is ever going to get a fair trial in that jurisdiction. So it's important that not all the information, not all the evidence get thrown out in the media instantly just because the reporters want something to report. And I don't think they take very well to it. And I think that's what you've seen in this situation, where the media has really stirred the pot, I think, over anger that the law enforcement hasn't been totally forthcoming with every last bit of information and evidence. Well, it's because the ethics rules say you can't.
You can't. Okay, here's what we're going to do, Ray. If we've got like two sets of headphones and four guests. So if we can kind of lay those out. And we don't want to turn them up too high or they'll feed back. But we got calls, and I knew we were going to get calls, and I just want you guys to be able to hear them. Let's start with Lloyd. Good morning, Lloyd.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I support the police, but I'm concerned also about what happened in Ferguson. So I have some questions, probably more specifically about Lexington. One thing that I have been impressed with the Lexington police, who I have had dealings with, for the most part, they wear name tags and things like that. That's one problem I heard that Ferguson had. One thing that I have heard, and I think might be good for Lexington if they don't have it already, do our officers have lapel cams or that Google Glass so that when they're going about their duties, they can record everything that happens so that if there is something where you have somebody like this young man who had just finished robbing a convenience store, and they allegedly come at the police, or they allegedly are surrendering, it can be really determined right now what happened. If we don't, I think that would be a wonderful idea if the city would invest in lapel cams or Google Glass for the police so that they can have their side of the story displayed immediately. I'm also a bit concerned that I heard that one cop in Ferguson may have been wearing camo. I don't know. That you hear so many stories. If he was, I don't think that was a good idea. I've been impressed that from what I've seen, the Lexington cops, for the most part, wear some sort of a police uniform all the time.
All right, hang on, Lloyd. Let's get some comment. Ray?
Well, no, Lexington does not have those kind of cams.
Would be a handy tool, though, wouldn't it?
It could be.
Yeah.
It could also be a lousy tool. I mean, it's
Northern Kentucky, the cameras are becoming more and more popular. I think some of our police departments were first in the state, if not in the country, to start wearing those.
Really?
But the durability of the cameras was really a problem, and they were breaking them faster than they could reorder them and replace them, so they quit using them for a while. Now they're starting to go back to them because the companies that make these cameras have made some improvements in their quality and in their durability, but now they're getting into problems with data storage because it's incredibly expensive to store these videos. And if you think about a police department like Covington, Kentucky, which is fairly good, not as big as Lexington, but a good-sized city, over 100 police officers on the department, and they're each wearing these body cameras on every call they go on, you're talking about some serious computer servers that are going to be needed to store these digital files. Mm. And as the cameras improve, the files get bigger and take up more space. I think you're going to be running into problems with police departments and their budgets trying to come up with millions of dollars to pay for data storage.
Chris, any thoughts?
You always want video on any case, just because by and large that'll give you the truest picture of what happened. But Rob's right, it can be a two-edged sword. When it doesn't work, it then brings a whole other set of issues into play, and just the logistics and financing of it are something that, as we've seen from our legislature, unless they're willing to give a huge investment in most localities, it's something that's really not practical at this point.
Rick?
Well, it goes back to the thing I said first. I think the reason that people want those is because they say the police can't be trusted, and I don't believe that. So I think it's a solution in looking for a problem that really does not exist.
Lloyd, your other thing was camo. Is that what you said?
Yes, the police should be in uniform. And just I had a quick suggestion. They would not need to save the data from every day, but at least save it temporarily if they do get into a situation like this. And this is for the police's own protection.
Well, let me give you an example, Lloyd. And it all started when we started recording interviews with defendants, or anybody, and all of a sudden something goes wrong with the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that happens is the police are challenged because they're then accused of misconduct because what happened to the recorder. Those kind of things, and those are the kind of issues that Chris mentions that would come up in the event that something went wrong. I mean, all of these things are being considered by police departments. As far as the camo
right.
outfit, you're just listening to what somebody's throwing out there. My suggestion is wait till the grand jury in St. Louis County gets finished with this for the facts.
Thanks, Lloyd. We're taking a break. 26 minutes after 9 o'clock, 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at WVLKAM.com. Ray Larson is here along with prosecutors from around the state, and we're right now we've been on the subject, of course, of what's going on in Missouri. Another call, but before we take it, Ray, you had something to say.
Yeah, I wanted to. The media and people have gotten all outraged over this white police officer shooting this young and killing this young black guy in Ferguson, Missouri. Let me tell you, Jack, the vast majority of homicides that occur in Lexington are young black men killing young black men.
Right.
And we're not seeing that kind of outrage. And what I want people to do is become outraged at that, too. But they don't seem to be paying that much attention to those things. The families of these young guys that are killed are just as traumatized as the families anywhere. And it's important that our community start getting fired up about those things.
Walker called yesterday. Walker is a
Walker Webb.
Yeah, he's a retired Lexington police officer who is also an African American. He called yesterday. I want to get your reaction to this, Ray, and you guys too. He said, "You remember we had an incident similar to this in Lexington not too many years ago." And he said, "We were on the precipice of having the same kind of situation. But what made a difference is we had a police chief that came forward and let everybody know what was going on right from the get-go." And he said he thinks that's where they've made the mistake in Ferguson, keeping too much from the public. Do you agree with Walker on that or not?
Sure. I mean, I was the prosecutor at
in that
the time,
case. Yeah,
and it was an Antonio Sullivan,
right,
who was wanted, and was the police were looking for him to pick him up, and they did. And in the process, the police officer was trying to uncock his gun, and it went off, and killed him. And we right away we said this case is going to go to the grand jury for them to make a decision. I came out after the grand jury, listened to all of the evidence. Anybody had anything to say about it,
mm-hmm.
to whether they were a witness or not, they got an opportunity to talk to the grand jury. They did. The grand jury voted not to indict. I came out and faced this whole bank of media types and said, here's the way it works. The police or whoever investigated it presented the evidence as well as anybody else that wanted to say anything. The grand jury considered all of the evidence, and they made a decision not to indict. That's the grand jury's decision, made up of our community citizens. That's the end of the story, and that was the end of it, and the whole thing kind of deflated at that point. And although it was a civil matter, you know, and the city ended up having to deal with the family civilly, but right. Not criminally.
Okay, this is Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, guys. Ray, this is for you because you got a lot of guys there. I mean, you're telling me the prosecutor in St. Louis, because I watched it last night, has been elected there four times, and they're going to take him off the case?
No, he said the governor. You said the governor suggested it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, if he's off the case, then it's going to be because somebody, the governor, asked him to get off. Because Bob McCullough is not going to voluntarily drop out of the picture. He's been elected to do a job. And, you know, just because his dad was murdered by a black guy who was charged with kidnapping doesn't make Bob unfair. I mean, come on. I know him.
Might keep him off the jury.
Yes. Now, that's different.
A different
that's
subject.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate your call. Thank you. We're going to take a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-8. And that's okay because we had some other things that we wanted to talk about this morning. Our guests in the studio represent all the parts of the state, north, east, and west, as well as Ray here in central Kentucky. In case you just joined us, Rick Bartley is with us, Rob Sanders, and Chris Coron. And Ray, you were telling me off the air something involving drugs in our state that you wanted to share with our audience this morning.
Yeah, Rick, we had a pull that mic over right in front of you. One of the presentations was about trends in drugs, and Rick and I were talking about it earlier this morning, and it's very interesting. Rick, tell us what we learned.
That's, I always try to come down and pick up something new, and this was probably one of the best things I've seen in several years, actually, and it was trends in drug cases. The speaker was Jermaine Galloway, who is a Boise, Idaho police officer, and he just blew all of us away that were sitting there watching, particularly with the legal marijuana situation. And he brought in a lot of information showing that marijuana legalization has resulted in a whole new way of smoking marijuana, which is wax and oils. And people can buy kits to condense this THC and make it 90% effective or 90% strength. And he said that a lot of people will not smoke marijuana now, that they're going to this new oils and smoking this concentrated THC. And he showed us a lot of equipment. In fact, he said what used to be called bongs to smoke marijuana, the new label for them or new term for them is oil rigs, because they're smoking this oil. And it was just really eye-opening that this stuff is here. And he went around Lexington and took photographs of this equipment being sold right here in town, which means this drug is being used here and all over the state.
What's the difference between what the stuff that people that were perhaps in the drug culture or whatever in the 60s... And we're back. All right. We're just having some kind of problem this morning. What's the difference between the stuff that you're talking about today and the stuff that folks that went to Woodstock in the 60s were smoking?
Well, the marijuana itself is much more concentrated now that's being sold legally. But the new trend is to even concentrate this 15 to 20% marijuana into essential oils. And one of the things he showed us there is that these new vaporizer cigarette or nicotine units, he said those are being used a lot to smoke drugs now. And the thing about that is, number one, they're very concentrated. But the biggest problem is they're almost impossible to detect because they release no odor unless you're standing right beside them. So you may think somebody's using one of them to take nicotine, when actually they're smoking marijuana oil, very concentrated, and then they're getting out and driving around and being everywhere else too. So a real trend. And I'd like to tell people his website is tallcopsaysstop.com. So it's tallcopsaysstop.com. And he has photographs and different things about these items. And if you want to get your eyes open, get on that website and look.
Okay, interesting. You guys have any more comments on
Well,
that?
Do you remember the people that have eaten these, what they call edibles, out in Colorado? They
talk about brownies and that kind of thing?
Yeah, the cookies and brownies and that sort of thing, and they'll eat a cookie and they got no effect, and so they'll eat the whole package of cookies. Next thing you know, they're really in almost a psychotic state and start doing things like jumping off the balcony, or they stab their wife, or whatever it is they do. What's the reaction from you guys?
Well, let me tell you about that, too. He also showed us one of the newest things is a coffee drink that you can buy legally in these places that does have this essential THC in it. And as he pointed out, these are people that's probably drinking this in the morning. And it says, so you'll feel good all day. But they're going out and getting their car and going to work or going somewhere. So the idea that all these people are doing this and getting out and driving really bears watching when we're talking about the legalization of marijuana.
Let's take a call here, and then we'll come back to this. This is Jerry. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, guys. Nice to hear you. A very professional group there.
Oh, yeah, we got the all-stars with us this morning.
Yeah. You know, I heard Sean Hannity last night. He had the, I guess, the family lawyer for the Brown family.
Uh-huh.
He's involved in the case, obviously, but he said they had four witnesses on that side that would swear that the police officer shot Mr. Brown in the back. Yeah, so, you know, and I don't think the evidence that I've heard doesn't support that. So I just wondered what y'all think about it. I don't want to get in the weeds with all this stuff, but that's what was said. And he was just pretty adamant in saying that. I just wonder what you all think about them.
I think that goes back to the main thing when you're managing a major incident like that. There's going to be a lot of misinformation put out there by lots of different sources, some well-meaning, some not so well-meaning. That's why keeping the public informed procedurally is important, but fact-wise, that's got to be left for the grand jury. I can tell you we've had several incidents where, because we've not released the facts of a situation, we've had witnesses come forward, some with correct information, and we've had some try to manufacture information. So that's why, on this case, and Bob McCullough's doing the right thing, keeping that information on the investigation closely held is one of the most important things in handling.
We as the public don't have to know everything, and in many cases, and this also goes to military strategies. We'd like to know everything, but we a lot of times do more harm than good if we do know everything.
Absolutely.
So I agree with you on that. All right, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty at WVLKAM.com. You had something else to say, Ray?
I forgot.
Okay, we'll take a break. Ray Larson.
Can we go around the horn real quick and find out what kind of issues are taking place in Bowling Green and Northern Kentucky and Pikeville and Eastern Kentucky? Chris?
You know, in South Central Kentucky these days, obviously we're dealing with drugs being the vast majority of our cases. We've even started seeing heroin come down into South Central Kentucky. One thing we did learn at the conference this week, which was a great surprise, something we'd heard had been in the works for a while. Joe Ranazzisi, who is the deputy director of the DEA, was down here, and they've made a public announcement that hydrocodone, which is one of the most abused drugs we see in the criminal justice system, 45 days from now will become a Schedule II narcotic. That will mean basically it becomes a felony offense. It'll restrict the prescribing requirements of it, And I think it'll have really a major impact on the way we handle drug cases.
That's a good thing.
That's a great thing.
Okay.
Rob?
Well, as we've talked about when I've been down here to visit with you and Jack before, our major problem right now is heroin. It's Covington has the motto that it's the gateway to the South, since we're at the very top of the state. And unfortunately, we've also been the gateway to heroin, because heroin, although now we're getting it directly in from Mexico, it started coming down from Detroit. And not only the drug overdose deaths that we're seeing, but all the related crime, especially burglaries, and all sorts of other property crimes and theft-related crimes that go with it, but especially the burglaries, have just gone through the roof. And our caseload this year is going to far exceed our record caseload that we've ever had before, probably by 200 cases. And obviously our funding's not going up. We're not getting more people. So it's a heck of a lot more work for the same number of prosecutors.
What about it, Rick?
Well, even though I'm in Eastern Kentucky, and even though that's considered rural, heroin is there too, Ray. It's not just an urban problem. It's a problem everywhere. I got a call from an officer day before yesterday. We had a heroin bust there in Pike County. So it's there. We're trying to be vigilant about it. I've been talking to some of the other prosecutors that have been dealing with it a little longer, but we're trying our best to stop the flow.
Chris, how about shooting? Well, I mean, we're seeing some reported shootings seem to be increasing.
We've seen a lot of that. We've had a lot of drug-related shootings and drug robbery shootings. These are major cases that use a lot of resources, not only from law enforcement and prosecutorial side. We're seeing as much firearm use as we have in quite a while.
What about you, Rob?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of it, especially in the more urban areas in Kenton County, and really hasn't resulted in a lot more cases for us because, for the most part, it's been victims who are very uncooperative and claim that they have no clue who shot at them or why they got shot at. They were just minding their own business, standing on the street corner, and all of a sudden somebody drove up in a car, started shooting at them, and then drove away, and they don't know why anybody would want to shoot at them. And it's just totally unbelievable. Once in a while, they actually hit the person they're shooting at, and then sometimes we end up with a case because the victims are a little more cooperative when they actually get shot.
It's that don't snitch.
Yeah,
mentality that we've got to break if we're going to ever stop this stuff,
Rick? Absolutely right.
What about you?
Well, we indicted a case 2 weeks ago where a man and a woman went in to rob some drug dealers, went in, tied up four people in the house. One of them had a handgun. One of them had an assault rifle. And during the tying up process, a fight broke out. They took the guns away from the burglars and the robbers and shot them. And then they shot two of the people that were in the house, so we had four people shot. And the problem was my grand jury didn't know what to do. Do they want to indict the people breaking in who were robbing drug dealers? They weren't too sympathetic for either side. So I had to convince them that, hey, we need to bring some charges, and so they indicted all of them.
Huh, really?
Well, there's a proof issue.
So everybody's the bad guy. Let's go to Kay. Good morning, Kay.
Yes, I had a couple questions, but my main question was, from a legal standpoint, I've been listening to a lot of the talk radio at night, that and people have called in and given a totally opposite perception on this incident. But how far has the governor and our wonderful attorney general gone in violating that officer's right to due process, because they have basically indicted him publicly, proclaiming they will pursue a vigorous prosecution, and Eric Holder made some stupid statement yesterday. Basically, he's going to make sure this officer is prosecuted. When listening to the radio, of course, the results from the autopsy showed this man was shot from the front. There were no shots from behind. They did three autopsies, marijuana in his system, and there are corroborating statements for the officer, and he gave a statement to a friend who called in that Michael Brown assaulted that officer in his car, crushed his optical, the socket of his eye, and ran away, and the gun went off while he was struggling with the gun. He got the gun, and then when the gun went off, both of them ran. The officer yelled to stop, And instead of, and he did stop. He put his hands up, and then he turned around and approached
him. You've done a great job, but we're almost out of time. So let's see if we can get a comment from her.
None of what you said has been
substantiated.
That's one side. And all of that evidence is going to, whatever the evidence is, will be presented to the grand jury. And I'll give you a great suggestion, Kay. Watch Andy Griffith a while.
Stop listening to so much talk radio.
Yeah, it's just kind of consumed everybody around here because I think they've already convicted him publicly. And my fear is that that's what they, with the feds coming in there, that's what they're going to do.
But, Kay, in essence, you've done the same thing on the other side. So the reality is, until it comes out in court, nobody knows anything.
You know, I would agree with Kay on one thing, though. Yeah. She's right that there are elected officials and appointed officials on both the state and the federal level that are sticking their nose into this case that have made some very conclusory statements and really jumped the gun rather than letting the system run its process, and they ought not do that.
Thank you guys for being with us. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're listening to 101.5 FM, it's the Coach's Show with Joe B. and Denny. Have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday morning at 6, 5 Central.